We have before us two, or Senate Bill 259, along with a possible proposed committee substitute. The, my perspective on this is we have before us really the whole question of the regulation of utilities in Title 42, and the committee may, after testimony, wish to make some other recommendations, adopting the original bill, not adopting the original bill, adopting committee substitute, perhaps changing the composition of the Public Utilities Commission, whatever is appropriate after hearing the discussions on the basic issue of the regulation of municipal utilities. There are a number of people who wish to testify here. I'd like to try and start with those people first and out of the state and understand their perspective. Some from Chicago and Seattle. And then after they have testified or their testimony, I'd like to take people from out of town. And then if time permits, we're going to people who are here locally. let's see. We have, we got the old deck here. Mr. Delagratis?
Yes, I'm with the committee.
Okay, and Mr. Meyer?
Yes, sir.
And Mr. Holman?
Yes.
Okay. I understand that your testimony needs a little preemption or lead-in by Rick Arnett.
That's correct. That's correct.
Rick is going to miss a chance. He doesn't get here in a hurry.
Is there a wrong door?
No,
you're in the right door.
How you doing?
I'm going to have Ted do it.
Rick?
Joe, I'm sorry I had to go try to get a few folks.
Okay,
go ahead and stop. Yeah.
This is your contingent? Hey, Rick, would you take the hot seat here?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, we've got some material here that I'd like to make available to everybody. What this is a bunch of exhibits that kind of plug into what I expect to say. And this is an outline of the points we would like to touch on with keys to the exhibits as such. And I know this kind of thing is impossible to absorb in the course of a hearing, but this way hopefully it's accessible at people's leisure.
As I mentioned before you came in, we're really, it's my intention to allow the leeway of testifying in general on the subject of municipal utilities and their regulation by the APUC. It may be that there are a variety of problems that are not addressed even by the bill or the committee substitute before us. And if there are other problems, then let's bring them up and discuss them.
So, Mr. Chairman, you have to move my coat.
You can do anything you want.
Not your tie. We don't want to call you by that. That is a broad charter. Mr. Chairman, I certainly understand the scope of the meeting as you've outlined it. Of course, our primary concern will be with SB 259, because that's what we're familiar with. To start with, I would like to point out a couple of things about the bill itself, and particularly to emphasize the modesty of the bill as we see it. this bill, of course, is talked about as a bill to deregulate Anchorage utilities, but it is much more limited than that. You'll note that the bill deals only with utilities which are not in competition with other utilities. In other words, it is not a completely blanket exclusion. The second feature, which maintains the status quo, is that the bill deals only with regulation other than service area delineation. In other words, under this bill, the PUC would retain the jurisdiction to divide up service areas as among different utilities in the area. At the outset, a couple of points. We have understand that the chair, and for good cause, I believe, has expanded the scope of the hearing and has suggested to other municipalities that there may be a substitution, or at least discussion of a substitution, which would bring all municipal utilities under PUC regulation. Our reaction to that is that this is not a matter of our initiative. That is, it is not the policy or the goal of the municipality of Anchorage to bring about regulation of other municipal utilities. We have certain reasons for that. We don't think that the PUC should be burdened further, for one thing, because we feel like they're already overburdened and that this is part of our problem with PUC regulation. We also are not spiteful in that we don't feel that because we labor under this regulation, that our brethren in the same situation should likewise suffer, even if we were unsuccessful in getting ourselves regulated. I think it's important what the chair has done, however, because it illustrates very graphically what is really involved in PUC regulation of municipals. So far, I think it's been possible to view this as essentially an Anchorage problem, and other municipalities have felt that they were not directly involved and needn't be concerned. By taking the step the chair has taken, we have dramatized what is really involved. And I think it's worth reflecting. If regulation by the PUC is a beneficial and a desirable thing, why is it that other municipalities, either through their ratepayers or through their utilities or through their governments, have not sought that sort of regulation? In other words, you would expect, if there were a felt need along those lines, that that need would have been voiced. To the contrary, what we see here is a rather dramatic response to the suggestion of putting those utilities under regulation. I think that response tends to speak for itself, but we will do some more speaking about it a little later on. To reiterate the status quo, Mr. Chairman, what we have now is, pursuant to the formula in the present statute, we have regulation of all Anchorage municipal utilities other than garbage, which is specifically excluded. By reason of the competition, in quotes, that exists between MLMP, the electric utility, and Chugach Electric, it is only as to those utilities that there is even any allegation of true competition. The other aspect of the status quo is that only Anchorage is in that category. And I think it's well to reflect that there are many, many municipalities in the state who do own their own utilities, do regulate them pursuant to Title 29, and as of now are not subject to this type of regulation.
Rick, are you saying that there are other parallel situations to Anchorage to the MLP and Chugach situation in other parts of the
state? No, Mr. Chairman. I mean only to say that, for instance, the Nome Water Utility is in the same situation as the Anchorage Water Utility, in not being in competition, but different in their situations, in that Nome is not regulated and Anchorage is. The history of the status quo, I think, is interesting. Is the regulation of municipal utilities, it's generally accepted, stems in large part from two major controversies that developed over the years. One was a dispute between the city of Kenai and the Homer Electric Company, And the other dispute, of course, was the MLMP True Gas Electric dispute. These difficulties related virtually exclusively to service area delineation. There was a tremendous legal battle as to who had rights to serve what territory. And it was basically a territorial type of argument. Both of these cases went before the state Supreme Court, which resolved them on a case-by-case basis, but in essence invited or pled with the legislature to do something about that problem so that all of these territorial matters would not continue to come before the court. The PUC did take over that function and did obviously a commendable job in solving some of the existing problems as relates to service areas. There are now coexisting private and public utilities in certain areas which have their own areas and are not considered to be in competition and are therefore not regulated, Fairbanks, of course, being the prime example. And if I'm not mistaken, the PUC has been instrumental in setting up those geographical areas. Those...
Fairbanks has a municipal electric utility in the Valley, and they are not regulated by APUC, but are have their boundaries delineated by APUC.
I believe that is correct, Mr. Chairman. Focusing on the Anchorage situation, our main point is that the history that led to the status quo has largely changed. The other aspect of the status quo, or the history in Anchorage, was the Anchorage telephone utility, which was owned by the city, but did serve customers outside of the city limits. Now, under that set of facts, obviously there is some rationale for rate regulation, because you need to prevent the owner area from taking undue advantage of the non-owner area. But our point at this stage is that those historical factors have been abrogated. We have got unification now, which has a very dramatic effect on these problems. The difference between the situation now and the past situation is that our ratepayers and our taxpayers and the constituents of our assembly are all one group of people now, which was not necessarily the case before. We no longer have this in-city, out-of-city possibility for conflict. With this background, Ms. Shen, we'd like to show that we think the present regulatory scheme is an anomaly. It doesn't make much sense either logically or in terms of experience in government. We'd like to also show by testimony and exhibits that there is a very great direct cost of regulation to Anchorage taxpayers and ratepayers, and that this cost, at least in the future, may well extend to other municipalities in the state, even if this committee does not act. And finally, we would like to show, primarily through expert bond counsel, that there is a dramatic effect on other municipalities, or there is the threat of a dramatic effect on the bonding ability and the financial health of other communities besides Anchorage. This is not strictly an Anchorage problem, and I will refer to testimony from Sterling Gallagher later on to support that point. The direct costs consist of several factors, Mr. Chairman. One such cost is simple delay. The exhibits you have, Exhibit B, 1 through 7, set out the status of a number of rate case matters before the PUC. Particularly, you might note on page 3 of 7, Exhibit B, with reference to the Municipal Light and Power rate case, that the case was instituted in June of 75 and is basically completed as of December 22nd, although there are still some aspects of that case pending. Likewise, the Anchorage telephone utility case, page 7 of 7, began December 75 and is still hanging on in part as of February 17, 1977. These delays are usual. They're not unusual. They're the rule in dealing with rate increases. And and they have very important ramifications on the utilities planning and on its financing. Mr. Starr, the manager of the Municipal Light and Power, has presented something of a case history in his description in Exhibit C of the so-called waste heat generator in Anchorage, a project begun some years ago with a view to saving both energy and money, a project which has been held up, say, 2 years from its original schedule because of the so-called regulatory lag that we're familiar with, and a project which has increased its costs very dramatically, both in terms of the direct cost of building the plant and in terms of the wasted fuel which would otherwise have been saved through the utilization of this method. Mr. Chairman, I also wanted to point out by way of introduction, I skipped it, that we don't view this problem as a personality problem or even primarily a political problem. I'm aware, I think everybody who has followed the situation knows that there are strong personalities involved and there are political implications in this particular dispute. And personalities do make a difference. But we feel above and beyond that sort of consideration, there is a real systemic problem. And I do want to make that clear. If I appear to be criticizing the PUC, I don't intend to be questioning the good faith or the ability of the PUC members. I think the situation that we find ourselves in is fundamentally illogical, and everybody suffers from it, including the PUC. The other aspect of direct cost that we've had to deal with have been the cost of preparing for APUC matters. The PUC, in its rules and regulations, provides for a heavy burden of proof on any party coming before them to seek rate increases or other relief. In order to meet this type of burden, particularly in the rate setting context, it is necessary to go to experts. It has been necessary to engage consultants. And Exhibit D summarizes the cost of some of those rate cases to the municipality over the past several years. These are costs which, in all logic, should be part of the rate base and are ultimately to be borne by the ratepayer. The sum of those matters that we have listed is somewhat over $800,000 just in the past relatively short period of time.
Rick?
Yes.
Almost half an hour.
Okay, I'm sorry.
And there are a number of other witnesses, and if we don't finish up today, I don't know when we'll have to take it up again, but I see people going back and forth.
Fine, 10 minutes?
Five?
Okay. 10. Mr. Chairman, I'll speed it up.
Good.
We have a long story. I will skip for the moment the indirect costs, which we're going to leave to council in terms of the response to the bond market. Mr. Chairman, I'll summarize right now, being able to take a hint, I think, if nothing else. We feel that apart from the financial aspects of this problem, there are pretty basic legal, governmental type considerations. We feel that it is basically illogical to have an appointed board supervising the decisions of elected officials with regard to matters which are of direct interest only to the constituents of those elected officials. We feel it's a strange anomaly to assume that those elected officials are unwilling or incapable of protecting their utilities and protecting their ratepayers and protecting their taxpayers and making these decisions in a responsible, intelligent way. This anomaly, of course, is increased by the fact that Anchorage, this time, is the only municipality in that situation. Mr. Chairman, with that, I would yield to outside experts.
Right, the question of the committee.
Well, Mr. Chairman, has the Assembly finalized action as far as the recommendation is concerned?
The Assembly is acting tonight, Mr. Willis. Originally, a resolution went to the Assembly asking for a flat approval of deregulation. The Assembly was unwilling to do that because they wanted to look at what type of procedure would be set up at the local level to handle regulation if they did get that responsibility. They've just received a final report from the Interim Utility Commission set up under the charter, a very detailed study of how the utilities ought to be operated. It sets up a whole program, and actually they want to look at that, see how they want to go. But they will act tonight, I believe, I'm told, I spoke with the mayor this morning, supporting deregulation in principle with the idea that a reasonable delay in implementation be built in to permit them to develop the scheme. The other aspect of it is that the Assembly did not realize that Title 29's procedures do apply to home rule. I was not at that meeting. Chairman Rose said we wanted to set up a program sort of like Title 29 sets up for other municipalities. Had I been there, I would have said, Mr. Chairman, Title 29 already applies even to home rule, so there would not be a gap. But we can report to the committee later this evening or tomorrow on exactly what action is taken.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, wait a minute, Rick.
Are we going to get another chance at him, or is this it?
I don't know. I have a question.
I'll be available any time. If the committee would like to hear other questions.
I have about a minute and a half, 2 minutes is all I have.
Okay.
Referring to your rate case history,
yes.
You're proposing to not be regulated by APUC. Going back to 1975 in June, you asked for a 15% increase.
You refer to a page?
Exhibit B, page 3 of 7. And my concern is that, without me specifically having to grind it out, over the next two pages is nothing but a continuous effort for rate increases. We start out with 15% and finally get a 29, an interim rate of 29, and then that goes to 31. That's since 1975 now. And in 1976, as a matter of fact, on the same day that APUC granted a 29.72% increase over the original rates, you requested and asked for 51.75%. And that was denied, but just followed this effort, and I'm wondering, presumably this had some approval at the municipal level to ask for these rates. So if we're looking to that to be, that body now to be the stabilizing factor, you got your hand in the pocket of APUC, or the ratepayer, more than you got it out over the period of 1975 and 76. So that's terribly weakening to your case.
These increases are very dramatic, and there's no way that you can minimize them. The old city, if it made an error in the way it handled its utilities, I think it's pretty generally acknowledged that the major error was not coming in for rate increases when they should have. They waited inordinate amounts of time, maybe for political reasons, who knows. They let the utilities go on for a long period of time without needed rate increases, in spite of dramatic increases in their cost. When we have to pay 50% more for gas, it costs us 50% more, at least in that component, to produce the electricity. When we give IBEW 30% wage increases, that goes right on top. And this is just part of a problem in the past for which there's not any particular way to explain. But
on page 4 of 7, October the 25th, APUC granted a 52.39% permanent increase. It says the reduction to the 52 from 64% was primarily due to the APUC revision to depreciation rates and the assumed equity of 70 to 30 rather than 60 to 40, which reflected $1 million savings.
That's right. When you talk about percentages of rate increases, and this is when bond counsel can be more elusive than I, it's somewhat deceptive because part of our problem with the PUC has been its insistence on dealing with rate matters in a way analogous to private utilities. In a private utility, the normal way to set a rate is a percentage of equity, because the private utility has the capacity to go out and sell equity. The municipal utilities usually do not operate that way. They operate by selling revenue bonds, and as Ferland Gallagher testifies in his exhibit here, it's perfectly reasonable to have a municipal utility with 90% debt and only 10% equity. Naturally, if you're looking at it that way, and you're only giving a rate of return on equity, that 10% of capital, the percentage rate of return is going to be very high in order to give you a decent amount of dollars. So the percentage is not really the only factor, is my point.
I'm just concerned that 1975 and 6, were you burdened within with the unification problem or lack of unification problem? Is that what you're saying? Because there's one rate increase requested right after the other one.
Mr. Chairman, I'm really not sure.
You're familiar with what I'm speaking about, right? It's in your exhibit.
Yes, that's right. But as to the exact rationale of the various rate increases, I am not qualified to testify. I can get Mr. Starr, for instance, to give you a fairly detailed justification of why
no,
those were needed.
No, I'm really not trying to hit at that, and nor am I being critical of you. But on one hand, to the electorate, who is going to, at least I received some correspondence saying, don't let them out from under regulation. And I'm thinking, well, maybe there are some, you know, maybe there's some good argument to let you out. But then I look at these rate increases, and you get one and ask for one, you get one and ask for one, you get, you know, right down the road, and it's terribly defeating to your point of view.
I think some of the references, of course, are to interim increases, and the amount of the interim is included, of course, in the request for funding. I think one useful approach would be to look at the percentage of rate increases that have occurred in other utilities across the state that are not regulated and see if
that is not.
I believe we've seen dramatic increase in costs.
Rick, there's been apparently pretty consistent differences between the municipality and the APUC on rate increases. What would you attribute this difference to? Is it you haven't built your case well enough? The APUC is just more concerned with keeping rates down to the consumer. They don't understand the problem well enough. What would you attribute the lack of the immediate acceptance of the rate increase?
Chairman, I think a lot of it has to do with delay. When one increase is requested and in the time, the procedural steps have all been taken and so forth, by the time that has occurred, the PUC normally suspends proposed rate increases for at least 6 months. Factors have changed so that at that point it's necessary to have yet more before the PUC has even digested the initial filing. Other than that, Mr. Chairman, I think that there is some feeling that municipal utilities should not make a profit, or that any excess profit that they might make on behalf of their owners should be very carefully scrutinized. I was going to review some of the recent litigation just by way of an answer. Just prior to unification, the PUC turned down rate increases for the borough sewer utility. They absolutely refused to grant increases, even though the evidence, uncontradicted evidence, showed that the present rates were, quote, confiscatory. That is, that the utility was operating at a loss at those rates. And in spite of that, the PUC would not raise the rates, and the Supreme Court said this was arbitrary and capricious and awarded the rates. In a recent case, MLMP, the PUC said they were not going to allow as costs any of the charges that the municipality made to the utility for services provided by the municipality to the utility. I think this type of decision has, if I can be forgiven the phrase, a political overtone. In any event, the court said that that was arbitrary and could not stand and did allow those rate cases. I think the PUC is concerned about the consumer. I think that the political climate of the times is very concerned about the consumer, and rightly so. And it is important, however, to realize that the consumer needs to have the utility in good shape. And I think that's the understanding which has been a little slow to come about.
Would you say the APU is adequately staffed? If you see, in your opinion, from your perspective, obviously, would you say that they have adequate expertise in their staffing and as committee members? Do you see any problems in that regard?
Mr. Chairman, my information on that is basically secondhand. I think that the PUC could use more staff, and I think that their proposal to have a larger portion of their staff outside the classified service is a good idea because it enables more expertise to be require any performance from there. But that certainly is a factor. As I say, part of the problem, and it may be that the PUC has had more trouble with Anchorage than with its other regulated industries, because a municipality consisting of elected officials probably has more of a resistance to regulation. And the PUC probably senses that resistance and feels it's necessary in some sense to make sure that, that the municipality is toeing the line. And that type of tension just is more or less chronic. Now, that's part of our problem.
Questions?
We've spent more money litigating. It was $100,000 just in litigation costs over the past 6 months. That is more, I think I can say with assurance, than was spent in fights between the old borough and the city. And those fights were one of the rationale for getting unified. And it's difficult to see a way out of it, given, as I say, the systemic problems that you have of one group of elected officials feeling that they have the right and the capacity to make these decisions, and yet butting up against another entity which feels it has that right.
Mr. Chairman, just one further observation. Something I mentioned to you briefly earlier today. You're asking to come out from under APUC, and then essentially it'll be controlled, presumably be controlled by the municipality, by the council. You think you've had your problems with APUC? Where will the voters get a hold of you when you try to, or where will get a hold of the council member when they try to make the rate increase? Have you thought absolutely about that?
Mr. Chairman, I am, Mr. Sumner, I have thought about that, and obviously that is something to think about. But it's also true that we do have a democracy, and I don't want to get too far out here, but I think that the elected officials have to be deemed responsible in making this kind of decision, and if they will not destroy the utilities by withholding necessary rate increases, nor certainly are they going to gouge the ratepayer by setting unduly high rates. They are responsible.
Mr. Chairman, I think maybe you've got a number two on that body who wants to get rid of this to get
the Mr. Chairman, there's a letter from Mr. Biss, who represents the city of Palmer. He speaks to this point in the packet. It says the directly elected and representative municipal legislative body makes a decision in each utility bond issue as to whether or not the proposed project is proper. This decision involves both political and economic considerations, and rightly so. It seems inappropriate that the commission and appointed body should take under itself the power to review the legislative decision as to whether or not a project is worthwhile, so forth and so on. This is the kind of feeling that we share.
All right, could you, perhaps in your order to the council for outside probably most presently finalized the especially whether you'd like to have
all right, just show it like here. I believe among ourselves we've had in mind Mr. Holman going first.
Yeah, I mean Mayor, Mr. Meyer, excuse me.
Chairman, my name is Don Meyer. My firm name is Marshall and Meyer. Mr. Marshall and I have participated in, directly or indirectly, all the financing that's been done in Anchorage since 1939.
Mr. Meyer, you were a bond counselor?
I'm a financial consultant to the municipality of Anchorage.
Is that one of these elusive things called a bond council? I've never met a bond
council. The bond council is Mr. Hall, but he writes the legal opinion. I just try to sell the bonds, and he proves them. We had, over all those years, been successful in marketing Anchorage issues, which came to a screeching halt in December 1974. At that time, we offered an issue of 6 million municipal light and power bonds, and there was only one bid, and the bid was, in my opinion, not acceptable, so we rejected it. And it became apparent at that time that the utility needed additional revenues because they were not meeting their requirements under the indenture under which the bond, biggest bonds have been issued. The first financing that was done, and I'll concentrate just on the problems of financing, and I'll make it as brief as possible. Because of the inability to market bonds because of insufficient revenues in the light department, it became apparent that they needed a rate increase, and machinery was put in operation to secure that rate increase. But one of the problems that the municipality faced was the fact that they hired expert engineers to develop the need for various rates, and that's time consuming. So as a result of that, and the fact that all the things that have gone on after that, that you're well aware of, it was necessary to do some interim borrowing, which was done in order to provide cash and systems to continue to operate. No financing, public financing, was attempted until July of last year, after the Supreme Court had issued its preliminary opinion. Because during that period, while all this matter was being presented and discussed before the Public Utility Commission, it was, in our opinion and others, impossible to sell any revenue bonds in Anchorage on a long-term basis.
I'm just wondering, the reason was because you couldn't be guaranteed of the increase in income to pay off the bonds?
Yes, sir. We could not meet the requirements as provided in the indenture under which the bonds, the outstanding bonds had been issued, and certainly not an additional amount because the revenues were not there making it available to do so. After the preliminary opinion issued by the State Supreme Court, it was determined that because of the need of funds in each of the utilities, an attempt should be made to market bonds, and that was accomplished by the sale in July of 1976 of 9 million telephone bonds, 10 million electric bonds, and 6 million water revenue bonds. That was the first financing done by Anchorage Utilities since sometime in the middle of 1974. In December 1 of 1975, at the federal level, certain additions were added to regulations which require full disclosure. We'd always felt that in our presentations we had given the investor full disclosure, but even in our case, we had to expand the information. Because of that fact, we had to reveal what had taken place on the matter of rate increases, the Supreme Court decision at the first time on a preliminary basis, and that information was widely circulated because these bonds were sold in various parts of the country. The rate that was paid for the $25 million took into account the situation as it existed. But the utilities needed the money badly. We had some short-term borrowing that had to be retired because it couldn't be extended under the statute. So these bonds were sold with all this information being developed. After the Supreme Court decision was handed down, and the need again arose for money in the electric and telephone situations. We went to market on February 22, 1977, with 9 million electric revenue bonds and 10 million telephone bonds. The rates paid for those bonds, and by the way, we had a divulge, and it's in the prospectus, we divulged the matter of the situation as related to rates. We also included a copy of a letter from the Public Utility Commission so that the buyers were fully informed. Now, as a when the potential underwriters received the prospectus and just look at it, pass it around, there's the information as related to the bond market generally. We didn't receive the numbers of bids that we normally would have if we hadn't had that problem. And as you know, the more bids you have, the better price you usually get. Several underwriters who had bid on Anchorage revenue bonds without the rate problem did not bid on these two issues. Going back to the issue in 1976 without the Supreme Court final decision, as compared and adjusted for market conditions and averages, the 9 million telephone revenue bonds sold in July 76, as compared with one sold in February 22, 1977, it cost the telephone system approximately $132,000 in extra interest. The same formula applied to the 10 million electric bonds. The difference, the increased cost in July 76 as compared to February 77 was approximately $179,000. Now, it's difficult for me to say to you that without the revelation of that type of information as it relates to Anchorage Utilities, that we would have gotten even a better price in February of 77 than we did get, because that's a guess at best, and I've been in this so long that I don't like to make guesses. But I think the only fact that we can rely upon is that we know of several underwriters and several institutions that will no longer buy Anchorage revenue bonds without complete control of the municipal fathers to adjust rates to meet the obligation as stipulated in the indenture under which the bonds are issued. Now, as compared to that statement that we have to divulge in case of Anchorage, I brought along a prospectus which was just issued, dated March 1677, 156 million Eugene, Oregon bonds, and the statement which they are able to make as compared with ours is considerably different. They say under rates, the board has exclusive jurisdiction to fix rates for electric service. Such rates are not subject to regulation by any federal or state utility commission or similar agency. In other words, the buyer then says, well, if they have to increase rates, they'll take the necessary action and do it. In the situation as we have now, the buyer hesitates because of the fact that the provision still exists that the PUC may issue some additional regulations and the utility be required to do certain things before it could be a rate increase or a bond issue sold. Now, I've concentrated just on the marketability I can say to you without hesitation that the existence of any type of control in a municipally owned utility, other than the elected officials or a board appointed by those officials to raise rates to meet their covenants, is very detrimental to the sale of bonds in the marketplace.
Ms. Meyer, I take it that you're a financial consultant to a number of municipalities outside of the state of Alaska?
Yes, sir.
How common is it to have, in these other states, to have an entity such as the APUC regulating the municipal utilities?
In the areas in which we operate, that commission does not exist.
Could you name some of the states?
Washington and Oregon, where we're active, along with Alaska. I just quoted you the statement from Oregon, and Washington is the same.
And they, even when there is competition between a municipal utility and a private utility, the municipal utility is still unregulated by any state agency?
I don't know of any competition anymore. We used to have a Tucson Bar and Light, Seattle Light, but Seattle Light at the moment, so we got rid of that.
Do these, Washington and Oregon, have a state public or state utility regulatory?
Yes. Sure, because they regulate privately owned, so.
Any questions from
that? Where's your office up here?
Seattle, Washington, 1705 Martinville.
Where'd you get your son from?
I just came back from Honolulu.
The municipality must be famous. And recently in California, I noticed in one of the articles, I don't remember which publication, that says they're having a difficult time selling bonds there, large, even where they're regulated by APUC, apparently, where they're not, simply because the consumer pressure has been so high, and this is why I brought the question up earlier, that consumer pressure being so high that they aren't able to get returns no matter which way they go, either by APUC regulation and fighting that battle, because there's some political and consumer pressures at that level, or whether it's done at the city council level or the municipal level. What do you think about that? Which way is more effective?
Well, I think in California, more practical problem in most parts of the state, especially in the north, and that is a tremendous shortage of water, and they're all in trouble financially, which I think is a bigger bearing than regulatory bodies at this time. I happen to know that in some cases.
And in selling bonds, the municipality, it seems to me like there should be some formula which, if complied with by the municipality or private enterprise, APUC is compelled to grant the rates, and it seems to me like we should be talking about or discussing that formula, or unless it's like the insurance business where it's too complex to boil down to anything but rates. Is that not the best approach to go? Isn't APUC with a formula the best approach to go?
Well, I don't know that the formula in one case would apply to another, but municipally owned utilities provide, and they sell their bonds, after operation and maintenance and before depreciation, they'll have X number of dollars to pay their principal interest plus the coverage bucket, whatever that may be. And it's just that simple. If you tried to, the municipal revenue utilities all start from scratch, and they start by selling revenue bonds. There isn't any equity. They start and they're 100% in debt, and then if they create their municipality, create their utility. And that's the way they operate. And in theory, it doesn't always quite work this way, but the bonds are retired in an amount annually, usually in line with the depreciation of the utility charges. So if it worked accurately, let's say you put an issue out that ran from 1 to 20 years, and a certain amount of bonds retired each year in line with the depreciation charge, at the end of 20 years, you'd have your plant written off, your bonds would be paid off. In theory, that's the way it's supposed to work.
But isn't the presentation to APUC and the decision or the basis with which they make the decision, isn't it more than subjective?
Yes, I think so, and I think that my testimony in connection with this matter the last time before the APUC, I took the position, well, let's work this out. We got to go. We have to work something out, and they came on. They wrote this letter that you saw there, and we were able to do this job. And I personally felt that we could kind of sit around the table, maybe we could work this thing out. But it wasn't, you know, went through all those many months, and finally the last time we were on this, I took the position, and I think the chairman who's here will verify that, and we got something accomplished, because they had some rules and regulations that they suggested, only suggested, that were completely unworkable, and I think they realized that after that meeting.
Do you think the system is presently too complex or too complicated?
I think the system presently is too complex, and I'll go back to what I said before. As long as you have the mission of any type of jurisdiction, which is a cross-country spell water, and it might even get to the place where we might lose more bidders. We might be the place where our rating services might cut the rating. Because it's so unusual. It's completely foreign in trade, really. There are some other commissions, but it's kind of a gray area. Nothing like this.
That's right. I asked you about Washington, Oregon, or the state that you actually work in. Are you familiar enough with this situation to be able to say that there are numerous other states that do not have any municipal utilities regulated by?
That's right. There are.
How many states do you know of that do not have this?
Be unfair for me to say because I actually don't know. But we do bond business, bonds all over the country. For instance, Nebraska is a good example. There are a lot of revenue bonds in Nebraska.
I'm going to try to, Mr. Chairman, along that type of question, along with the rates or the costs of the bond. Is it more beneficial universally throughout the states that have deregulated or unregulated municipal utilities?
Well, the unregulated municipal utilities are in a much more advantageous position, just like I read you out of the Oregon prospectus.
I understand, but is that universally true? Or
yes. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. Who would like to be on next, Mr. Belgrados?
Well, I'm not going to promise, Mr. Chairman, to be brief. I will be brief. My predecessor covered the subject, I think, fairly well from the market standpoint. I'd like to focus on it a little more sharply.
Mr. Belgrados, could you give us some of your background in particular?
Okay. I'm with John Mavine and Company. We're municipal bond underwriters for something like 80 years. Like Don Meyer's firm, have participated in the underwriting of many, many Alaska bonds, including Anchorage, and currently act as financial advisor to the state of Alaska.
Bond underwriter does what?
Bond underwriter buys municipal bonds from municipalities and then turns around and sells them to investors, institutions, individuals, banks, insurance companies, primarily in our case. Okay, what I thought I'd focus on is the fact that Naveen is in the position of an investor, just as you might be if you went out and bought 10 or 25 Anchorage bonds. We have something like $1 billion worth of tax-exempt bond funds outstanding. These are like mutual funds, except that the portfolios consist wholly of municipal bonds rather than stocks and corporate bonds. And as sponsor and seller of these municipal bond funds, we have certain criteria that we look to in selecting municipal bonds to put into these portfolios. And among these criteria are ratings, of course. No bond with less than an A rating, that kind of thing. Obviously, we don't buy bonds in areas that are under some kind of a cloud, and this bears on the Anchorage situation. We have not bought New York City bonds for, well, whenever it began, a couple of years ago. We have not bought, and incidentally, not just New York City, but we haven't been buying for the bond fund any bonds in the state of New York. We won't buy Buffalo, we won't buy Albany. Not because there's anything particularly wrong with Buffalo and Albany, except that they lack market acceptance. The cloud is a sufficiently large one that it covers practically the entire state. Now, that situation is beginning to change, and this isn't just what Naveen is doing. Other investors are behaving the same way. So there's a little bit of an analogy here between Anchorage's problem, I think, and what might happen in, I don't know, Fairbanks or Ketchikan or other places with respect to regulation.
Then you could conceive of the possibility that because Anchorage is regulated, that investors would become nervous about other municipalities also being regulated, and therefore their bond rates would perhaps go up.
Sure, because Alaska is really a small place. It's big. But in the minds of the investor, it's very small. It's small in terms of population, it's small in terms of its economy. Now, anyway, I don't know what's going to happen 3, 4, 5 years from now. And they tend to relate everything to everything else. This is Alaska. As a territory, it didn't have the kind of name that the banker would like to buy and put in his portfolio. As a state, it has gone a long way down the road of respectability. And this is pulled... This has pulled the municipalities, I think, along with it. But anything that happens in this kind of a milieu, I think, has an effect on every other municipality and its position in the market. Okay, getting back to this other business then. You don't buy New York for that reason. You don't buy Puerto Rico, for example, for other reasons, including maybe the bombings and the independence movement and things like that. So these are subtle things, but the market puts a price on them. And that's what Don Meyer was addressing himself to. And I think that the committee ought to bear that in mind, that it's all economics, it's all dollars and cents. If the situation, though, gets sufficiently difficult, it's not just dollars and cents, it's access to the market. The New York situation was so bad that the door was just slammed in their face. The market, the banks, the insurance companies said, no more, we don't want it. Don't come to market, there's no money for you. A municipality, and I'm not talking about Anchorage alone, could conceivably get into a similar bind. There are these covenants that Don Meyer was talking about, the covenant to maintain rates sufficient, et cetera, et cetera. If an issuer cannot meet such a covenant for the issuance of additional parity bonds, the door, in effect, is shut to that issuer. The alternative is to sell subordinate bonds. That's like a second mortgage, that kind of thing. That translates into dollars. The second mortgage obviously costs more than a first mortgage. Junior lien bonds or subordinate bonds cost more to sell than parity bonds. So these margins of safety, which historically have been built into these bond issues, both in terms of the test for the issuance of additional parity bonds and also in terms of maintaining rates sufficient to do business, to produce a sufficient cash flow for the utility to maintain its affairs in an orderly manner. These covenants are there for a reason. They're not there to gouge the public. They're not there to produce surpluses for the city to take and do what it will with them. They're there primarily to safeguard the investor. And what I was getting back at is here's Naveen now, like an investor, looking at this world of issuers and bond issues, and it'll pick A or better. It'll pick those that have rather stringent requirements with respect to rate covenants and additional bond covenants. It looks to the marketability of these bonds. Does the market accept Alaska? Does it accept Anchorage? Why doesn't it accept Anchorage? Obviously, an attempt to keep Anchorage and other municipalities under the aegis of the APUC with the kind of history that we've seen in the last few years, the constant adversary relationship between the issuer and the APUC, the costs, the doubt as to whether that rate increase is going to come through so that they can sell the bonds, because if it doesn't come through, they're not going to sell them. All of those things are adverse, in my opinion, as an underwriter and as an investor. And this is the way we see the situation. We share the feeling that was already expressed that municipal officials are required and must answer to their constituency. Maybe this is simplistic, but I think that an assembly, a city council that approves rates for municipalities that the citizens feel are inordinate, unfair, I think these fellows are going to be out of a job pretty quickly. That's the way we look upon it back in Illinois, anyway.
Could I ask you the same question I asked Mr. Meyer? You're going to be more familiar with the national, different states throughout the nation. Are you, in fact, familiar with most or all the states and their public utilities commissions with respect to municipalities?
I have a good feel for that.
Are there other states that have a public utilities commission that regulates municipal utilities?
Very few.
Very few?
Very few. It would be the exception rather than the rule.
3, 4, 5 states, perhaps?
I wouldn't say that, but the preponderance of states exempt municipal utilities from regulation. And they're able to make the kind of statement that Oregon has made, and that's a very positive thing in the marketplace.
Could you, you mentioned something about a history of the regulation of the municipality by, in this case, APUC. Is that a function that is an investor would look at the history of the Public Utilities Commission's regulations and say, well, those guys are too tough, they keep denying the rate increases, therefore it's risky? Or is just the very fact that there is a potential for this to happen enough to kind of scare investors off or during the crisis?
Yeah, the people that buy these bonds are not necessarily people like you and me, the man on the street. In our business, we are what we call in the business an institutional house. We deal with institutions. We're dealing with all state insurance companies, which annually buy billions of dollars of municipal bonds. And we're dealing with the First National Bank of Chicago and all of the premier names in the insurance and banking business. These people are extremely sophisticated. They're as smart as we are. We don't like to admit that, but I'm being very, very frank. These people know what they're doing. And they're extremely careful because they're buying, not just as a trader to make a dollar, buying bonds and then selling them to somebody else. They're buying them for portfolio in many cases. They're buying bonds for trust accounts, for situations like that, where they're in a fiduciary relationship. So they're watching these things very carefully. We know that they're critical. And we, as underwriters, are the ones, really, who are aware of what's going on with APUC here in Alaska. I don't know that the trust officer who sits in the Continental Bank in Chicago knows about the controversy. But if he did know about the controversy,